Hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the Daily Game College Podcast for the first day of November 2019. First day we survived Halloween. I'm Derek Hunter. I'm your host. Thank you for listening, tuning in, telling a friend, doing all that good stuff. We only grow because of your word of mouth, so thank you for that. Keep telling people and telling friends and everything. It's flattering. It's wildly flattering, and I appreciate every single one of you. Excuse me, and all the emails who come in and that come in saying how you found out about the show, how you enjoy the show, how you hate my guts, and well, maybe not all the emails. I'm just kidding. I don't get very many of those emails, but I appreciate them too because that means you're listening, and that's all that really matters. Give me your ears. And I will help fill the space in between, my liberal friends. Oh, I would say we got a lot to get to, but we actually have a great interview today. It's a special edition. It's the vast majority of it is an interview with the one and only David Limbaugh. Great, great guy. Had a blast talking to him about his new book, Guilty by Reason of Insanity, Why Democrats Must Lose. He is full of knowledge. He's full of piss and vinegar. He's ready to go when we talk to him. It was great. He's always fun to talk to. If you ever get a chance to go to like one of those rubber chicken dinners with David Limbaugh or to a book signing of David Limbaugh, go hang out with David Limbaugh. Take the opportunity. You will not regret it and order a copy of his book. It's wildly important, as you'll hear in our discussion. So we got about almost 50 minutes with David. I could have gone longer. I could have gone the whole 60 minutes, but my damn, what do you call it? What is that stupid thing? My parking meter. My car was going to turn into a pumpkin. I parked in a spot that at 4 o'clock become a tow-away zone. And the only thing the Washington, D.C. government does with any level of efficiency is ticket and tow. So I knew that I had to get out. So I got out at like 3:55 and ran to my car. And damn if I didn't see a tow truck getting the guy behind me. I still had like 2 minutes. I don't know what the hell he was doing. I guess maybe it was a Prius. So maybe it had died a slow and painful death, a deserved death. But until we get to the time with David, we have a little bit of time spent together where we will talk about the impeachment vote and an admission of the existence of the deep state by a former CIA director and a cheering of it. If this doesn't disturb you, if this audio doesn't disturb you, then nothing will. Because the idea of a deep state is directly thwarting the will of the American people. The people who run around and chat about this is what democracy looks like and Donald Trump is a horrible threat to our democracy are all in favor of thwarting that democracy when it doesn't go their way. I'll have an example. Plus, Katie Hill gives the Hill a big kiss off. Or scissor off, or whatever you want to call it. I only want to play a few seconds of her very bitter and angry farewell speech to Congress because I think it encapsulates who she is as a person. She's not the victim. She's the perp. So we will get into that as well. But first, oh, by the way, we'll give away the Jarrett Stepman books. I do have one signed David Limbaugh book, an older book to give away too. Since David wasn't able to be in studio and we did it over Skype. I apparently have a stash of David. Every time I see him, he's given me piles of his books. And now I have like 5 of his new books, but they're unsigned. So when he's in town next, because I ain't going to Missouri. Sorry, David. I will get those signed and we will retroactively give away David Limbaugh books. So sorry about that, but I can give away one. I think it's Jesus Is Risen. I'll check it during the interview. And I'll announce the winner of the Jarrett Stepman books at the end of the program. So it's an action-packed show. But first, a hat tip, a word to our lovely, lovely sponsors. You should patronize all of our sponsors. They are awesome, awesome folks. Look, I'm a firm believer that when you're healthy, you're happy. And that's why I use CBD oil from ancientlifeoil.com. It's a natural remedy made from nothing but the purest ingredients and blended with coconut and hemp oils. I'm telling you, it's a home run hitter for your health. I was a skeptic, I really was, but now I see why it's so wildly popular. I feel great. Ancient Life Oil is non-psychoactive, meaning it provides you with all the benefits, but without the high. Sorry. I encourage you to do your own research, though. Check it out for yourself. Just search in any search engine, CBD oil benefits. See what you find. See why tens of thousands of your fellow Americans have made CBD oil a regular part of their healthy routine. If you're ready to live your best life, and you should be, because we're going to need you in the fight the next year, go to AncientLifeOil.com now, the trusted source for the highest quality CBD oil. Ancient, A-N-C-I-E-N-T, LifeOil.com. That's AncientLifeOil.com. Use the promo code Derek, D-E-R-E-K. Hey, that's me. At checkout, and you receive free shipping. Shipping gratis. You can't beat it. Okay, the House of Representatives yesterday, in the name of democracy, took the first semi-formal official, kind of official steps to undermine the will of the American voter and overturn the 2016 election, which they view as a great injustice. All the Democrats, except for two, voted in favor of the Democrats' bastardized rules of impeachment, and one independent, Justin Amash, who was a former Republican who's just angry and bitter that nobody really cares about Justin Amash. And so he thought he could make a name for himself. He's like, I don't think he's running for re-election because I don't think he would win re-election. And it's amazing how many conservatives, so-called conservatives, self-professed conservatives, feel the need that when they do not get enough love in Washington, D.C., they feel the need to leave and smash the store as they walk out. That's who Justin Amash is. But the true bipartisan vote was against impeachment. But Democrats don't care. They've been plotting this since the day after the election, actually. They've been talking about impeachment the entire time. I could regale you with clip after clip of Maxine Waters having a Tourette's fit about impeach 45, impeach 45. But I have too much respect for you and going into a Friday, and I want you to be able to hold down meals all weekend. So I don't want to play a bunch of anti-Maxine Waters audio and things like that. But this is who they are. This is what they've wanted. This is what Democrats do with power. They are always crazy with power. They're always willing to abuse power. And that's why they should not get any power. That's why you should not instill any power in them. It's insane to trust, you know, it's like Charlie Brown, the American people sometimes, the Democratic voters. Charlie Brown and Lucy with the football. She's not going to let you kick it, dude. She's never going to behave herself. She's not going to work towards what she says she's going to work towards. It's going to be fringe stuff, like passing bills in the House of Representatives that allow men to compete with women in sports and schools across the country. You know, the important things that everybody's talking about around the water cooler. Yet those are the focuses of the Democratic Party. Oh, they hang out little carrots about this, that, or the other thing. We're going to protect your rights on this or give you rights on that. They don't really ever move on those things. They'd much rather run on those things. That way they don't have to run on the stuff they really want to do, which is crazier. We get into all this with David Limbaugh, but I just wanted to mark on that because not much is going to change. The Democrats and the media, we're all very proud of themselves. They've actually voted to advance an impeachment investigation. Finally, this is what the president said he demanded. And then tomorrow and next week, Adam Schiff is still planning on a whole bunch of secret committee hearings where access is restricted and we're supposed to just take their word for the things that they say and find. So realistically, nothing has changed except they finally voted. That puts targets on the backs of a lot of Democrats in the upcoming election. And I do want to say a big shout out to my buddy Sean Parnell. Remember Sean? He's been on the show a few times. I'm going to have him back. He is running against Connor Lamb up in the Pittsburgh area. So if you're looking for a solid conservative to take back a seat in the House of Representatives, Sean Parnell, decorated Army Ranger, best-selling author, hell of a novelist, and just an all-around good dude, even though he likes the Steelers a little bit too much, check out Sean Parnell. Just Google Sean Parnell. You'll find it. And we'll have him on the show again, because I don't really endorse candidates officially, but unofficially, I endorse Sean Parnell with all my heart. I love to see a guy like that with character like that in Congress, but that's just me. All right, quickly, I want to play a clip from the former CIA director, John McLaughlin. He was deputy CIA director under George W. Bush, and then he was acting CIA director under George W. Bush. Has there ever been an administration that has spawned more thorns in sides of the people they purport to represent than the Bush administration? Honest to God, Nicole Wallace came out of there. You name every ass clown who's now a liberal TV commentator or columnist, pearl-clutching never-Trumper, it seems like they did a stint in the Bush administration. He really was the Barack Obama of the Republican Party. Barack Obama left the Democratic Party in shambles, and George W. Bush left the Republican Party in shambles. Although the Democrats are more loyal to the ideology because of the groupthink aspect that they have. Anyway, I want you to listen to John McLaughlin from yesterday at an event. I believe it was in Washington, D.C. or New York, one of the two. Those are the only places these swamp dwellers ever venture. And he's asked by the host of the CBS Sunday morning show. I can't remember her name or the name of the show. It's irrelevant. Nobody watches it at CBS. But he's asked about the deep state and the bureaucratic class that is, you know, working actively against the president of the United States. As I said yesterday on the show, that's who the so-called whistleblower actually was. So listen to his response and keep in mind that he's sitting next to, I think it was John Brennan, by the way. So CIA directors, deep staters themselves, the intelligence community, gleefully joking, laughing about actively thwarting the will of the duly elected president of the United States. This should send a chill up everybody's spine.
You'd have to agree that the impeachment inquiry is underway, sparked by a complaint from someone within the intelligence community. Feeds the president's concern and often used term about a deep state being there to take him out.
Thank God for the deep state. I mean, I think, you know, everyone here has seen this progression of diplomats and intelligence officers and White House people trooping up to Capitol Hill right now and saying, these are people who are doing their duty, who are responding to a higher call. Mm-hmm. Think about it for a minute. With all of the people who knew what was going on here, it took an intelligence officer to step forward and say something about it, which was the trigger that then unleashed everything else. Now, why does that happen? Tell American people why that happens is this is the institution in the U.S. government that, with all of its flaws, and it makes mistakes, is institutionally committed to objectivity and to telling the truth. It is one of the few institutions in Washington that is not in a chain of command that makes or implements policy. Its whole job is to speak the truth. It's engraved in marble in the lobby.
Isn't that lovely? The former CIA director going, thank God for the deep state. Because otherwise, the duly elected president of the United States might be able to implement their policies on foreign affairs, you know, the ones that they were elected to do. It is chilling. It's not surprising. And the Inside the Swamp audience cheers and laughs. Well, they're only thwarting Donald Trump. It's not like they're thwarting Barack Obama. Everybody was a good little soldier and kept their mouths shut when Barack Obama was president of the United States. Notice how no one leaked the fact that we were sending pallets full of cash to Tehran in exchange for some hostages. Nobody let that cat out of the bag, and the president of the United States didn't brief members of Congress beforehand. But Donald Trump, oh, he launches an attack that kills Baghdadi, and, well, why didn't he let Nancy Pelosi know? The New York Times needs to know, and Nancy Pelosi was just the person to tell them. It's chilling. It's not often that these people have gotten so brazen because they've gotten away with it for 2.5 years that they're now openly laughing about it. They seem to think that the American people one day will go, thank you. Remember that time I voted wrong according to you? Thank you for setting me straight by not allowing the person that I wanted to be president of the United States do the presidenting of the United States. They believe, and they love that phrase, we'll be on the right side of history. Even the Never Trumpers said that, well, I want to be on the right side of history when this comes down, which just means I want to suck up to liberals because I figure they're going to eventually be our masters. No, thank you. Not from me, anyway. They all can go straight to hell. It was funny because when Barack Obama won, there was no constant, incessant whining about, oh, we must do everything we possibly can to thwart his will. He must be stopped in any other way other than at the ballot box. And that's how Republicans were able to stop him. And then, being a typical liberal, what he did was said, okay, well, you guys won. The will of the people is clearly not on my side. You took the House of Representatives. Screw you guys, I got a magic pen and a phone. I'm just going to start issuing executive orders. And Democrats, even elected Democrats, cheered the exorcism of Congress out of the legislative process. The one of the unambiguous things that the Constitution gives to the legislative body is the ability to legislate, hence the name, the legislative body. And the liberals cheered. Oh, the president is so progressive. If Congress won't act, then the president must act. No, the Congress not acting is the Congress acting. They're choosing no. They're choosing the status quo. Whether you like it or not, that's what the people we elected were doing. And it wasn't good enough. They just said, screw it. And now holdovers, leftovers, little hangovers from the Obama administration are out there actively thwarting the next president. And they get accolades from the inside the Beltway crowd. Very disturbing stuff. Okay, we're going to get to the David Limbaugh interview now, and then after it, we'll play the Katie Hill kiss-off for the House of Representatives. She'll be missed, I'm sure, by people who like to bang their bosses on both sides of the aisle. So it'll be bisexual bipartisanship. So we'll play that, and we'll give away the signed copies of Jared Stepman's book and all that good stuff. Plus, I'll tell you which David Limbaugh book I do have signed that I can give away. So here you go. Without any further ado, the David Limbaugh interview. Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the Daily Caller podcast for the first day of November 2019, the day after Halloween. Your sugar hangovers are going strong, and we have a great guest for you. His name, ladies and gentlemen, David Limbaugh. He's the author of the big new bestseller, Guilty by Reason of Insanity, Why the Democrats Must Not Win. David, welcome back to the program, if via Skype.
Thank you very much, Derek, my favorite Skype host in the history of the universe. But you made a mistake already. You had that book at the wrong angle. I'm personally offended.
I can do the entire interview like this, David.
Thank you. It looks really good next to your face.
If I had another one, I could do like the Princess Leia earmuff hair. But I'm not going to do that. I want to talk to you before we get into the book, and we're going to get into the book. I want to get your reaction to the House action, voting finally to sort of move forward on some kind of impeachment thing. I know how long it takes to gestate a book, and you couldn't have written about the news of October 31st in a book that was published on October 28th. But if you can, give me some winning lottery numbers. But you're a man of all trades and a jack of all trades and a political commentator. I just want to get your thoughts and pick your brain on what we're seeing right now.
This is a bait and switch. I'm entering this interview right now. We said we'd talk about the book 100%. I'm outraged. What was the question?
I don't even know. I don't pay attention.
I don't remember what I say after I say, oh, I can't believe these Democrats. I mean, they've considered Trump a walking high crime and misdemeanor since he came down the escalator announcing his run, been trying to oust him in search of some evidence of a high crime or misdemeanor. And they, of course, the Russia hoax, which they perpetuated, didn't work. And do you remember for years how they scoffed at us for even suggesting it was a hoax?
Yes.
And the Never Trumpers especially. Robert Mueller was put on a pedestal, an idol, the perfect Robert Mueller, and he didn't even come through for him. There was no shred of evidence of collusion, conspiracy, whatever nebulous term you want to describe to say that Trump coordinated with the Russians to steal the election. And after that failed, the Democrats, unfazed, unaccountable, nobody's ever held Schiff to accountability to account for what he said. I have concrete evidence I'm going to present. He never did. And then without flinching, he just pivots to Ukraine, another hoax. And Trump just says things out in the open. If Trump thought he was doing something nefarious, do you think he would have done it in front of all those witnesses? It's just Trump is the most transparent guy. Whatever else you want to say about him, he believes what he's doing is right. He has a right to investigate Joe Biden. And by the way, we do what they did in 2016. And we're going to get to the bottom of all this. It's all this corruption, hopefully. But I just find the Democrats amazing. They won't allow us due process. And now they did that little secret thing in the basement. Now they've been forced out of the basement, and now they're coming up and acting like they're giving us due process, and they still aren't. It's a charade. They're not going to convict him. But somebody made a great point on Fox today. I don't remember who. All faces are the same to me at this point.
Racist.
That's another. You might as well accuse me. You might as well pretend to be a Democrat and make those accusations for purposes of this show and controversy. Somebody said, and I think it was an astute observation, have we ever had an opposition party spend the entire 4 years not on policy, but trying to oust a president for things he never even did? I just 4 years, if they go this next year, that's what it's going to be, a whole year. And they are.
Well, David, the alternative is to get behind one of their lunatic candidates, which dovetails nicely into your book, and then talk about the policy proposals that they're putting forward, which is free this, free that. Everybody gets a gumball in the morning and a mint on their pillow at night, a foot massage on demand, and whatever you want in between those two events. That's the insanity that they're doing. If that was our hand, I'd try to do like the three card Monty guys at 3 o'clock in the morning in Times Square and distract everybody from what I'm doing. That's essentially what we're seeing here. Now, let's talk about the book Guilty by Reason of Insanity and the distractions and what the Democrats are trying to distract us from, because you meticulously go through just about every policy point that is important to the American people and point out how the left has completely gone off the deep end on that. Let's start right now with infanticide. It was Bill Clinton in the 90s, we want abortion to be safe, legal, and rare. And that was not a controversial statement. Now you've got the governor of Virginia, the governor of New York, and Democrats all across the country that says, well, you birth the baby, and then you can have a little powwow, and you get 3 to 6 months to decide whether or not you want to kill it or not. And if you stray from that, somehow you are not only anti-abortion, or anti-choice is the way they frame it, but you are anti-woman. This is a level of insanity that I don't think 5 years ago, if we could time travel and talk to ourselves, either one of us would have believed that they would have gone this far this fast.
No, what happened is Obama gave him the green light on same-sex marriage and all this other stuff, and his radicalism was mainstreamed in warp speed, and now they're so crazy with Trump derangement syndrome and their own extremism that they're emboldened and they're listening to their base, and one's trying to outdo the other in leftist extremism. But I will take minor issue with you, my hero, on your statement that safe, legal, and rare was not controversial. It always bothered me because it was a fundamental lie. If the fetus, the unborn baby, is just a clump of cells, there is no reason to make abortion rare. And of course, they never did. They were always lying. And if one party, as I say in this brilliant book that I've written, If one party...
We'll edit that out. Don't worry.
If one party was adamantly opposed to abortion and the other one wanted to make it rare, how is it possible we've had 60 million abortions since Roe versus Wade in 1973? It's not possible. So they used to pretend that they believed that the unborn wasn't alive. Now 4D imagery has made it impossible to deny that it's a baby we're dealing with. And we know we have all the evidence, things that start happening at 6 weeks, heartbeat and all this other stuff, pain. And then as the weeks accumulate, it passed, other things that can do somersaults at early weeks. Now they're admitting it's alive and saying, I don't care. We have a right to kill the baby. In fact, it's part of our right as women. And if you want to stop us, then you hate women. You're trying to suppress women. But now they say they don't just assert their right militantly for abortion. They celebrate it. Shout your abortion. And then they light up in ghoulish pink the New York, the buildings in New York to celebrate their abortion. One professor somewhere, some Eastern lib, is going around giving these lectures on how abortion is actually affirmatively moral. If that isn't objectively depraved, then we've lost our moral anchor entirely and are living in moral anarchy.
How have we gone from the left saying, I want you out of my bedroom, stay out of my bedroom, to on your way out of the bedroom, leave your wallet on the dresser because I want you to pay for whatever goes on in here and whatever results from inside here?
But we all knew, and Christian liberty advocates have been predicting that they would, that with same-sex marriage, or we just want to be treated equally. Now they have to force society to sanction same-sex marriage. Now we can't even say what we think. If you say you're for traditional marriage, if you're for the biblical view that God made man and woman and for marriage and all and procreation, you are committing hate speech. I wrote about this, by the way, in my book, Persecution, like 2004, 2005, where the parts of Deuteronomy or whatever the admonitions against that were, that was hate speech. I think it was a candidate case. And now here it is. They're actually saying it's hate speech just for expressing an opinion that people have held since the founding of the Republic. And by the way, they still do. That's what's I was talking to Dennis Prager on a radio interview. He's amazing, as you know. And I said, it's not just that the left is doing this. They have cowered our side. We're afraid to say what we think. You and I aren't, but somebody on our side are afraid to say what they think for fear of being ostracized.
Well, you see the woke mob go like a pack of rabid spider monkeys after anybody who dares stray from the liberal orthodoxy.
What's
kind of funny is I always say Frankenstein's monster always returns to the castle. You see, this has happened to Joe Biden a little bit. The left loves to sit back and watch this army go and just wreak havoc on society and on people, on conservatives in particular, go after advertisers on Fox News or your brother's show, whatever. Then every once in a while, somebody will dig up something that Joe Biden said 20 years ago, and he doesn't get immunity for it. They go at him. The monster always returns back to its creator and destroys. And the Democrats' whole strategy seems to be to keep people outraged, to keep people at a fever pitch, somewhere around 9 on the 10 yep. scale, hoping they don't break, but hoping they don't fade away either. And they just pray to God that anger and rage that they're fomenting doesn't come back on them. But the left, as you point out, is so demanding of absolute purity on all of these issues that anybody who is their 1% opponent is their 1% enemy, is their 100% enemy. Let's talk about gender. Because that's been in the news a lot lately. We've got the, I think it's the national champion female sprinter happens to be capable of using a urinal.
Yep.
The redefining of words and the ignoring of science. I thought the Democrats were the party of science.
Yep.
The ignoring
yep.
of science based on political expediency. Talk about that a little bit.
It is amazing. We had a sexual revolution in the 60s. Before you were a fetus, probably.
Yeah.
I don't like to use that term, fetus. That's right. See, that's an example.
I wasn't even, I wasn't a baby. I wasn't a clump of cells. I still had a couple of siblings before I came along.
just have some courage and call yourself
you're
a baby.
You're old is what I'm saying, and I'm not.
God, what, do you have any of that spray that makes me look younger?
Spray paint to cover up the camera?
Yeah,
no.
Yeah. Okay. Well, now, there was a sexual revolution, as I say, in my profound new book, Guilty by Reason of Insanity, that, you know, it's all about licentiousness and sexual libertinism, sex everywhere in the streets. Good time to be alive, by the way. Too bad you weren't alive.
And hey, we got Katie Hill in Congress, so we know all about it.
and so that was that sexual revolution. There's a new one. It started with, it's come in three waves. This is not my idea, some other profound thinker. Three waves. First, feminism. And back then, militant feminists, by the way, whatever else you want to say about them, they were pitting men against women. Mm. But at least they acknowledged there was a difference between men and women. That was something good. And then we had the homosexual movement, same-sex marriage thing. And as I said, they acted like everything's going to be fine if you just give us some rights and we're done. But now they've gone full bore, ape, I don't like, not cuss.
Feces.
Bat blank crazy. And this transgender thing, gender ideology says that gender is fluid, that gender is a social construct, that gender is not a matter of biology, that you are not, your sex is not determined by you're assigned sex at birth, assigned sex, whatever your biology is, and it is determined by how you identify. So some of these crazy wacko lunatics refuse to go to gender reveal parties, gender reveal party. Somebody's going to say, I'm going to have a baby. My daughter's pregnant. I'm going to have a party for her. We're going to celebrate her daughter. Some leftist writer somewhere says, I'm outraged that they're revealing the gender. This is not up to the parents. This is not up to the biology. This is up to the kid to decide what gender he or she is. And we're supposed to sit around with a straight face. And as other people point out, Camille Paglia, among others, no matter what kind of transition surgery they do, no matter how much they tamper with people's biology, they're not going to be able to change their DNA coding. People are born male and female. I'm sure there's some aberrations, but 99.1 billion% of people are either male or female, and they can't change that. And so now they're talking about 70-something genders, and misgendering is a violation. I don't know if it's actually a criminal violation. It's an administrative violation in some places where you can be fined up to $250,000 for refusing to call someone they or some plural pronoun. I don't have the patience to deal with this stupidity. It is not worthy of a debate. So why'd you write a chapter on it? Well, I thought I'd sell books and make some money and support my kids who believe in gender biology.
You missed your call in sales, David. But I will point out something that I think is important that I don't think is brought enough attention to. The feminists, the real feminists, are not particularly happy about this idea that a guy who's 280 pounds and all muscle can suddenly throw on a dress and compete against women in sports. The Democratic Party, what I think is missed a lot, is that the Democratic Party is a coalition of disparate groups that, if left to their own devices, don't necessarily get along all that well. And they are only united by their unifying hatred of conservatives and the fear that Democrats instill in them that no matter how bad it is, you know, voters in Detroit or Chicago, yeah, we've really run your city into the ground, but just imagine how much worse it would have been if Republicans had been there. They have to maintain a common enemy. Otherwise, these groups of people would realize that they're A, being played, and B, really have conflicting interests with one another.
Very, very profound. The enemy
Thank
of
you.
My
We're
enemy.
Done. That's enough. Friend. Don't need your answer.
That's enough. but at least let's record some more in case I say something good, and then you can splice
okay.
it in.
There we'll might fix be it in post.
So the enemy of my enemy is my friend, which explains why liberals love Islam more than they love Christianity, even though Islam is far harsher on homosexuals, et cetera, et cetera. That's one of the bizarre anomalies. But they're eating themselves. The liberals are eating themselves because there is no structure to their ideology. They're multiple ideology. They're just nuts. So here's an example. Whereas homosexuals used to say, I was born that way. Now transgenders, who are just sucking all the oxygen out of the room for them, are saying, no, gender is fluid. I can transition anytime I want. I can be a male one day, a female the next day, and a plural pronoun the next day. And the gays are going left in the lurch going, gosh, I guess I can't say anything because you guys now have the floor. We pushed this. Now we handed the baton to you. You guys are more radical than we are. So what the hell? What are you going to do? So now you've got the gays being crowded out by the transgenders who are making those crazy statements. And then you've got the feminists, those poor feminists who are saying, who are wearing vagina hats and celebrating their femininity. Femininity? Yeah. And
not and usually, but that's what they say it's for.
Yeah. And they're being lambasted for coming out for females only. No, this is the era of intersectionality, the hierarchy of privileges and oppression. So a female, a white female, she's already made it through the door. There's less discrimination between white males and white females than there is between white females and any other group, black, transgenders, whatever category. So white females are pretty privileged too, according to this hierarchy of privileges. So the intersectionality police are on them for that. And as you mentioned, the transgenders are entering their place, their spaces, sports, their bathrooms, the military, all kinds of things. And can you imagine the absurdity and the objective unfairness of allowing males to enter professional female sporting events and destroying them? Because we all know, those of us who don't deny science, that men are biologically stronger and faster than women. Now, I might not be, although I can move pretty fast. But truthfully...
Well, no, look, Michael Jordan could come out of retirement, and I bet he could still dominate in the WNBA. It could be, you know, there used to be the senior PGA Tour. I don't know if there still is. But the women's sports could end up being the senior version of the male sports. And nobody wants that.
No, and was it 1984 I quoted in my book? But I can't be expected to remember everything in my book. There's like 11.
Starting with something would be a plus.
Let me get a hold of my ghostwriter. Okay, yeah. No. So you know, I think it was 1984 when they forced people to hold up four fingers and they said it's five, and they forced them to say it was five or vice versa. And they finally just browbeat them into saying left is right. True. That's what we're doing with gender. We know nobody that I know of that has any shred of intellectual honesty and sanity would say that a male is a female is a male, and that it's fair for somebody to compete in that. And Martina Navratilova, herself a lesbian, was outraged by this and came out and spoke out against this unfairness about allowing biological males to enter female sports. And they savaged her.
Yep.
They savaged her. And she didn't back up totally. She has some guts. She didn't back up.
Well, that chapter two of your book is the victim hierarchy. There really is this sliding reverse food pyramid of victimhood that the most ingenious thing about it, from a marketing standpoint, you've got to admire the way that the left comes up with these things, because it's a sliding scale where they can decide on a whim whatever happens to fit best their needs at that moment. Somehow they can bastardize reality and put this one ahead of that one, ahead of this one, ahead of that one. Meanwhile, you get a Condoleezza Rice or you get a Clarence Thomas, who, if you just look at their food pyramid of victimhood, say, well, then they should not be savaged the way that they are. They're just ignored. They have an uncanny ability to reset the rules at a moment's notice to decide whatever they want them to be and ignore anything that contradicts those rules at any given moment. Talk about the victim hierarchy, because this, I think, is where we're really moving to as a society if the left gets control.
If I didn't know better, I think you'd read my book.
Well, you should know better. I can't read, David. I can't read.
Because you use the exact examples, Condoleezza Rice and Clarence Thomas that I talk about. See, black conservatives are probably the most discriminated against people ever. I mean, it's amazing. But Clarence Thomas, they want to take down statues of him. They refuse to write. See, it's not just that they do it on a whim. It's you can be a black female, and that's pretty low on the oppression hierarchy. In other words, you're entitled to more protection the more oppressed you've been historically. So
right.
Black females are entitled to a lot of protection, unless, and here's the consistency from them, unless you're a conservative, then you have no protection. So all their whole thing is about identity, categorical class, identity politics, but you don't qualify for that class which makes a mockery. If I'm to be judged by the color of my skin, then it doesn't matter if I'm a conservative. These people, this drives me. I got a sphygmomanometer over here somewhere, and I can show you it's going up.
Well, you write about that in your book, the sort of bastardization of Martin Luther King's dream, that you be judged by the content of your character rather than the color of your skin. That's no longer operative, yet they still cloak themselves in the aura of Martin Luther King. They still cloak themselves in the aura of JFK, saying, oh, he was wonderful, he was our president. JFK couldn't get a daytime speaking slot at the Democratic convention because he was anti-communist, he was pro-America, pro-military, and he cut taxes. He would be run out of there in a heartbeat.
You've disgraced yourself because you've once again proven that you read the book. I'm sorry, folks. Sorry, Derek.
I have a reputation to uphold, David, please.
Okay. And what was the question? Because it was, you gave the answer anyway. I don't have to answer. That was great. You just were basically paraphrasing my
book. I know. I don't even know why we have you here, to be perfectly honest with you. I could just talk all about your book.
But your viewers don't like me. They like you. Just talk for an hour about how awesome the book is, and they'll buy it.
The bastardization of Martin Luther King's dream.
That's a dream speech. Thank you, because I'm a lady. So they of course, used to identify with that philosophy. And Martin Luther King, by the way, as you just said, embrace the American idea. He just wanted it to apply to blacks as well. And so judge me on the content of my character, not the color of my skin. Now, Don Lemon at CNN says, I'm offended if you don't look at me as a black man. He rejects color blindness. He wants us to focus on the color of his skin. And here's the worst part of it. Critical race theory, which is another one of these whack out theories that they're disseminating in the liberal colleges, says that racism is systemic. And so this is convenient for the left. We are racist, you and I, whites, especially white conservatives. And by virtue of our skin color and our political philosophy. Now, you can be the sweetest person in the world to minorities, and you can have great character. You can be the opposite, the antithesis of a racist. But they will tell you that doesn't matter because you are, by virtue of the group you're part of, a racist. How convenient for the left. They've always got a victim class. And this applies to gender and the rest of it. There is nothing we can do to atone. So this joke about reparations, for example, the Civil War didn't atone. Reparations, have you thought about reparations? Consider reparations in the context of intersexual hierarchy of privileges. So you got to give black people a bunch of money. You've got to give black, lesbian, transgender liberals money. Who gives who money? How much? It's got to be scaled. And I mean, really, I how do these people go out in public without being embarrassed if they express their actual point of view? I wonder how many people in this cabal that we call leftism and the Democratic Party, which is now a wholly owned subsidiary of the left, how many of them really believe this nonsense as opposed to just being afraid to say what they think?
Well, how many of them actually believe in this or just recognize it as a necessary and useful tool to win votes? Because they talked about, you know, we need comprehensive immigration reform during Obama. They could have passed it. They didn't even try. So how much is this just a political strategy?
I really do believe it's about power, and that's what identity politics is. And I in my wonderful book, I talk about
you have
Shelby
a book.
Steele.
You have a book. Wait a second.
I have a book out. Far be it from you to promote the thing, but yes, I do. And Shelby Steele, he's an intellectual, wrote about. I'm not going to say he's black because then I will be identifying his race and violating my principles. But he is, and he a black conservative. He talks about how all this stuff. And he says there was what's really gotten the left in a conundrum, and the Democratic Party, is they identified with the cause of civil rights and all that, and they did make some progress for black civil rights and all that, and they took on that cause, and now that there is, and by the way, I'm not giving them all the credit for this by any means. That's another story. We have to bring Dinesh in here for that, but we. Yeah, he says that they're frustrated. They have nothing else now because we've achieved, we've overcome so much of the racial problem, the racism problem. Obama was elected and all that. I mean, the left won't ever admit that. And by the way, we came back to a lot of racial disharmony with Obama. Statistics show that, and I got that in that wonderful book too. And high point of racism in our country with Obama for a long time, since the Civil War, whatever, under Obama. Now it's down under Trump. I know it's counterintuitive. People don't believe it because they've maligned Trump as a racist. No, for no other reason than he's a border hawk. He's done nothing to validate that claim, that slander. So Steele says the Democrats are totally frustrated. That's why they're in a perpetual rage. I think it's more complex than that. I think their policies are bankrupt. They don't have any substantive policies that aren't just insane. They're now full bore for socialism, and we can get to that, but you know, it enslaves, it impoverishes. Think of the things they advocate. There's nothing constructive that they have anymore. So they're frustrated and they're pissed. And they're pissed that they're not in total power because ultimately they're intolerant, totalitarian, authoritarian. They want to be in control. They're not in control. They love to tell people what they can do. They love to take people's money that they earn and give it to other people so they can virtue signal and pretend to be compassionate, not out of voluntary giving from the heart, but through government coercion. And they just are frustrated that they don't have authoritarian control. I think that's part of it, too. And also, we need to do a commercial for Hall's cough drops. I took one a minute.
Well, I wish you'd stop beating around the bush and finally come out and say what you really think, David. One of
I'm just playing a role.
You have two chapters down at the end of the book. If somebody had read it, they might have discovered that it is about Trump derangement syndrome, and you bifurcated into two different categories. The politicians and entertainers and the media get their own chapter. Let's take the politicians and entertainers, and sadly there's too much bleed across that border, but talk about how Trump derangement syndrome has materialized itself within the political realm and in Hollywood.
Well, you know, what we talked about a minute ago with Adam Schiff and the other Democrats being on a constant mission to undermine Trump and refusing to do anything. They won't even pass a criminal justice reform bill that they've been advocating because it will help him and it'll give him a win. But they really are nuts. They're, to some extent, I mean, a lot of this is posturing for power, but they really do hate his guts. And I think part of the reason they hate him is because he refuses to cower to political correctness. And that's a big thing. He affirmatively rejects politically correct. He even said he's rejecting it. They can't stand that. He stands up to him. I know that's cliche at this point to say that, but he stands up to him and fights. He refuses to accept the canard that Democrats just want to get along and have harmony and kumbaya and compromise. He's not stupid. He doesn't fall for that. Who is stupid are the Never Trumpers and the squishes in the Republican Party who really think Democrats want to get along. There is one host on one of the popular TV shows, a female who I like personally, who asked a question of one of her panel members. Well, you know, during the immigration fiasco fight, the wall fight. And she says, you know, what's the problem here? Democrats want border security and Republicans. Why can't they? I went, no, you really? No, you've got a job. You've got a job as a no. No, no, no. They affirmatively don't want border security. They want to abolish ICE. They want open borders. They don't like national sovereignty. They're not into nation states. They want to flood the borders with a new dependency class because they not only are they going to make government dependent, they already are. Illegal immigrants are availing themselves of all unbelievable welfare, medical benefits. It would scare you. We're paying for this.
Yeah.
And they're saying they want to get them in and make them dependent and vote for them for that reason. And also because they've already told them that we hate them because we're racist. We don't want them in here because we're racist, not because we believe in sovereignty and having controlled legal immigration and asking the immigrants, at least asking them to, when they come into our country, to at least pay homage and allegiance to our Constitution and to learn the lessons of civics and to pass a test and to be
patriotic. We don't even teach our own kids civics anymore,
no,
David.
That's true.
We don't. If you walked around with a briefcase full of money and offered a wad of 20s to anybody who could, you probably do.
I'm Rush's brother.
But offered, you know, anybody on the street. Just you name three or more Supreme Court justices, and I'll break off a wad of 20s to you. You may even end up going home with more money than you had when you went out. We aren't being taught, name three branches of government, and I bet your money would be safe. It's a testament to just how sad our education system is and how much we're willing to tolerate the lowering of our standards. Now, the next chapter in your book is about one of my favorite topics, the media, and just how awful Trump derangement syndrome is. We need to have a telethon to counteract the scourge of Trump derangement syndrome in the media. They have the sad tales of woe of slow motion video of Andrew Cuomo looking all confused, which would be easy to find. But talk about how, because a big focus in my writing and a big focus in my book is how journalism is dead. It didn't die of natural causes. It committed suicide, maybe during autoerotic asphyxiation. I don't know. But it's dead. And Trump derangement syndrome is one of the last and biggest nails in that coffin.
That's true. And the audacity, the chutzpah of you referring to your own book.
Outrage Incorporated, How the Liberal Mob Ruined Science Journalism in Hollywood. Available now.
In a time when we're supposed to be shamelessly promoting my book. That's okay.
You blurbed my book and you didn't even read it, David. Give me a break.
I read it twice. After I blurbed it. Just kidding. No. Okay, you're so right. I'll give you an example. Anderson Cooper, and you saw this, asking Joe Biden a question, and he embedded in the question his own subjective view. Yeah, your son, Hunter, has been wrongfully accused.
He did nothing wrong. I can't stress that enough. He did nothing wrong. He's as pure as the wind-driven cocaine that he snorts.
Yes. And so in the question, he already made the judgment. So Biden. So any audience member who has been told that these guys are objective and journalists and are stupid enough to believe it might say, okay, that obviously if Anderson, who seems like he's a journalist, if he says that, then Biden's son must not have done anything wrong. I honestly, you know, Chuck Todd and these guys, here's what I think is going on. Part of me thinks that there is an overt conspiracy, because if you ever heard the sound bites, for example, and you may do it too, that Rush has played for years, they say the same things over. I mean, like 50 different
hours. It's a hive mind. It's a collective brain. They used to send out talking points memos. Now they don't have to. They're all automatically on the same page.
But the phraseology, it's uncanny if it's not a conspiracy. But here's the other part of that, the other side of that. I actually think these guys believe it. Here's what's bothered me since I was in college. And by the way, the media, the left, I remember Ted Koppel, Cronkite, Rather, Brokaw. They all have this self-righteous air that what they're doing is more important and more holy, I should say holier, than what a priest or what a pastor is doing. Their commitment to the truth is somehow sacrosanct. And so they say in their little meetings with each other how important it is for the media to present things, their truth, and it is truth. And anybody that deviates from what they're doing, and anybody considers that they have a bias, is wrong. So they sit in their echo chamber, and they really believe that their leftist version, their views dominated by their worldview, their take on the events, such as their PolitiFacts and their fact-checking thing. They think their subjective determination about what goes on is fact. This is the scariest part. I don't think they sit around going, ha-ha, we're really screwing the public, deceiving the public. They are self-deceived. Now this is complex, because it's just like we talked about the internal contradictions with intersectionality and all that. I know part of it is conscious deception, but there's a big part of these guys that self-righteously believe that their subjective views are objective truth. And you may think I'm full of it on that, but
right.
Their arrogance is one of the scariest things about them.
Well, it's arrogance coupled with ignorance. And that's what I see in someone like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. is she is completely ignorant about the founding of this country, the basis for this country and the founding principles of this country. But she is so arrogant, mostly because she's surrounded by sycophants, both on staff and in media, that she's never confronted with a contrary opinion in real life. So when she sees it online or sees it on television or hears it on radio, she never opens herself up to the possibility that most human beings do, which is, do they have a point? You know, should I rethink this? And maybe you come to the same conclusion, but she won't give that second loop back into, do they have a point? Because it's so beyond the pale when your logic is clouded by emotion, when it's overridden by emotion. There is no valid point anybody who you hate because you think they hate you could ever make. So there's no reason to even address it.
Yeah, and exactly. And there's another.
God, I'm smart.
Of course you are. There's another, which demonstrated by your choice of having me on this podcast, that one of these female reporters, I can't remember because my book is like, what? Did I say 1,100 something? I can't be expected to remember all
this. It's a big book. It's a lot of end notes, though, and double spaced.
Ghostwriter. I don't have a mic from the ghostwriter. And I'm trying to remember what the what the female reporter said. But she's basically saying there is no racism. This is another thing that's laughable. There is no racism in the Democratic Party.
Yes.
Therefore, the racists naturally go to their home in the Republican Party. I'm sorry, there just is no racism in the Democrat. Are you kidding me? Everything they do is racist when it comes to black. Focusing on color, patronizing blacks, telling blacks that they're not, or any other minorities, that they can act however they want, that you can go, well, I don't want to get too controversial here, but they don't treat them with dignity.
No.
They do not treat blacks.
They don't treat them as individual human beings. That's the real problem.
I'll just say that, because if I said what I really thought about how bad their attitude is, it makes me sick. My quarrel is not with black liberals. It's white liberals who patronize blacks, treat them as a lesser human beings who do not have to be accountable because they were discriminated against, and we can never get over it. We can never atone. But ultimately, they have to be beholden to the Democratic Party, to the liberal establishment. It's disgusting. And so you treat them, as you say, as part of a group, and their skin color dominates everything. How can we ever really live in a harmonious society and totally eradicate racism if we don't at least aspire to color blindness?
We can't.
And yet
we've gone from a melting pot to a series of chafing dishes. And it's because the left can manipulate those chafing dishes. David, in the book, Guilty by Reason of Insanity, Why Democrats Must Not Win, when somebody closes the cover for the last time after they finish the book, what do you want them to take away? What do you want to stick with them?
Okay, I really think that there's a lot of books out there, and there's so many good books, and a lot of them cover the hoax and the conspiracy. I don't cover that as much detail because too many other books. What mine is a comprehensive analysis of all the different issues we talked about: abortion, socialism, socialism versus capitalism, immigration, Trump derangement syndrome, and the rest of it. And my goal was to have a very broad scope, but also a deep dive into the philosophical underpinnings of some of their ideas. And so I cover socialism and capitalism in three chapters and challenge this unchallenged premise in our society that socialism is more compassionate, just doesn't work. It's better in theory. I talk about how I was a young kid and I never accepted this idea that socialism was good in theory. It's contrary to human nature. It's contrary to freedom. We were made to be free beings by our creator, and it suppresses our liberties and our drive to produce. And it ultimately is enslaving and impoverishing because political liberty and economic liberty are inextricably intertwined, and you can't have one without the other. And so I want people to have ammunition because we are in a war for the preservation of America as founded. And I'm not exaggerating when I say this. If you look at their agenda, we've gone through it, the abortion thing, murdering of babies even after birth, and full-blown socialism. America will not be the same if the Democrats regain substantial control of the executive and legislative branches. So everything in that sense hinges on the 2020 elections and thereafter. We have to fight every day. Even if we win in 2020, the left is relentless. They'll never stop. So I want them to realize the urgency of the situation we're in. We've seen how fast they've accelerated into warp speed in these various policies, how they've come out of the closet. If we don't win now, we're going to have a lot of trouble, because we already see the youth accepting socialism, 70% approval of socialism, because they've been indoctrinated by the culture, academia, and the rest. We've got to fight it now and beat it back now. And then we've got to do what we can to re-educate. Wrong word. That's a commie term. Do what we can to educate our young people about the virtues of capitalism and the evils of socialism and the horrors and depravity of abortion and the rest of it. This book is designed to be kind of a manual and figurative ammo for people to go out and proselytize. Somebody said on Twitter, oh, you actually think the young people are going to read your book and world's... No, of course not. But I think that people who are influential that do read it can go out and proselytize. And I don't have any ambition. I'm not arrogant, and really, even though I pretend to be on your podcast, that who knows what's going to have a difference. We all got to work together. You're doing what you can every day. You're doing a lot of good. We've got to fight. That's why Trump invigorates me, because he's fighting. And we're not just pretending these guys are trying to get along. They're not. They want to destroy America as founded. I can't exaggerate that enough.
Well, David, last question for you, and I do agree. Donald Trump, the biggest appeal for me for Donald Trump is Republicans for so long throughout my lifetime would get punched in the face and then apologize to the Democrat for hurting their hand. Did I hurt your hand? Can I get you some ice? Donald Trump isn't interested in that. He doesn't play that game. He hits back twice as hard. Yep. He never hits first, but he always hits back, which is a nice, refreshing change for most of us out here in the real world. Your last few books have been religious-based. You're now back in the political fight, and we're glad to have you with Guilty by Reason of Insanity. But last question. When you hear some on the left, the one who jumps to mind most is Pete Buttigieg, try and co-opt Christianity by deeming anybody who disagrees with progressive politics as un-Christian in some way, as a theologian, what goes through your mind when you hear stuff like that, trying to justify abortion, for example, by citing scripture?
Anti-Christian thoughts go through my mind. No, but I address that too in my comprehensive book. Did I mention that it was comprehensive?
You didn't even mention you had a book. I'm surprised. Yeah, why is this the first I'm hearing about it?
The publisher told me to mention the book, and I've forgotten gone an hour without mentioning. Sorry, I'm really sorry. So, no, I talk about how ridiculous these guys twist scripture, how ridiculously they twist scripture. By the way, the book of Acts, you know, they had a kind of a commune situation where they were giving all their money to the poor, selling the property and giving it to the poor. And liberals will point to that and say that it endorsed socialism. And I go into some detail, probably 5 pages, of refuting that it was a voluntary arrangement. It wasn't socialism. It was voluntary giving, no government compulsion. And plus, there's so many other places in the Bible that underscore private property. For example, the 8th commandment, thou shalt not steal. I maybe get them wrong. And the 10th, thou shalt not covet. Both of those implicitly endorse private property. Private property is thus biblical. The socialism negates private property. Now, maybe not in the lighter forms, but socialism has a tendency to organically get worse and worse and worse. And Marxism, of course, is built on no private property, class struggle and all that. And so it's the idea that the Bible supports socialism is preposterous. The idea that it supports abortion is even more offensive. Before you were in your mother's womb, I knew you, God says in the Bible. Before the creation of the world, Jesus was predestined to, and they decided he would come to save us as sinners, and he knew every one of us already. It's absurd to say abortion is somehow sanctioned by the Bible. Anytime you try to articulate something like this, you lose ground, because you're conceding the point that there's any kind of sense to it. Well, there's no sense.
When you aren't bound by reality, you can get away with anything. And when the arbiters of truth, the media, who are supposed to hold you accountable, are on your team, are wearing your uniform, you can get away with so much more. David, we could talk all day, but people should go out and buy the book, Guilty by Reason of Insanity, Why the Democrats Must Not Win. I've got a whole bunch of copies of your book you've got to come to town to sign, David.
I would love to. I got a question before we get off.
All right.
My question.
What do you
got? It's hot in there. It's hot in here. And I don't know if Skype works where you can actually feel the heat in my room or just visual.
I can't
audio.
Feel the heat, but oddly, I get your smell. I don't understand what the deal is, but I
can smell that
you.
Hurts.
David, my friend.
Thank you.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you. I know you're going to sell hundreds of thousands of copies of this book. Go out and buy it now. It's available now. It's an important handbook for the next year. And everybody needs it. David Limbaugh, ladies and gentlemen, the man, the myth, the legend. Thank you, David.
Thanks. Thank you.
There you go, the great David Limbaugh. David really is one of the nicest people. Who am I? I should not be friends with David Limbaugh. You know, he is light years ahead of me in everything, and he could be hanging out with really super cool people, and yet here we are. That if you'd have told me 10 years ago that I'd be friends with David Limbaugh, I would not believe you. But then I wouldn't believe most of my life that I've been lucky enough to live. So what are you going to do? I mean, I'm sitting in a basement talking into a microphone that this time is plugged into my phone because the power was out earlier. And you guys are listening to it. If you'd have told me that anybody would listen to it, listen to me yammer, I would not have believed you. It's kind of funny. Growing up, I was always sort of a motor mouth, and my parents would always say, stop, you know, be quiet, come on. They would try to encourage me not to talk constantly because I was talking constantly. And whenever they'd have friends over or adult parties or whatever, we were sent upstairs. And I always wanted to hang around with the adults. I always wanted to talk about the news and talk about the world. And they would go, you know, go to bed, go upstairs, go play. Well, I got the last laugh. I get paid for my opinions, which is bizarre to me and incredibly awesome. Okay, let's get to Katie Hill really briefly. She will be missed. Moment of silence. Yeah. Katie Hill, of course, is the former member of Congress from California who was banging a campaign staffer. The 22-year-old fresh out of college woman, she brought that girl into her marriage and they had a thruple sort of thing going on. Now Katie Hill, being the strong, powerful woman, independent woman that she is saying that her husband was all abusive to her. Okay, you can't be super duper strong and powerful and a victim at the same time. You got to pick one. She's chosen victim because in the Democratic Party's hierarchy of things, there is nothing higher than, I would say there's the king of the hill is victimhood, but the person of the hill, the nondescript gender of the hill is the victim. So she has been painting herself as a victim all week long since the nude photographs of her fooling around with a staffer showed up. Of course, it's a huge violation. It kind of looked like she was violating the staffer, you want to be perfectly honest with you. But hey, I don't know how certain things work, and I'm okay with that. But she resigned, not because of the embarrassment of nude photographs out there. It's a rite of passage for the left, I think. It was because she was accused, credibly, of banging a couple of staffers, including her male legislative director, in the House of Representatives, which, even if you're a liberal Democrat, is a no-no. You're not supposed to bang staffers. They passed a rule in the Me Too era, making it against the House rules to bang subordinates. Look, there are plenty of people in Washington, D.C. you can fool around with, and I'm sure most of them would be down with bringing 4, 5, 6 other people into the bedroom with you. Katie Hill didn't have to dip her pen in the company inkwell, but she allegedly did. Rather than fight that, she denied it and then immediately ran out of Congress. She resigned at the prodding of Nancy Pelosi. But Katie Hill can't be mad at her progressive goddess because she one day wants to get reelected back to Congress because she thinks this will blow over. And when Democrats violate rules or laws, it's no big deal. It's no big shake. Everybody just kind of lets it go. So she went the route of nailing herself to the cross. And on her way out, she decided to really, really play the victim card. This clip's about 12 seconds long.
but it is indicative of the entire 7 or 8 minutes speech, and it's pathetic. This is incredibly pathetic. Katie Hill had an opportunity to go out with some dignity. She did this to herself. The choices she made and the actions she took came back to bite her in the, bite her somewhere. And she doesn't want to admit it because the currency of the left is victimhood. And her next play is probably the speaking circuit where LGBTQRSTUVWXYZ groups all across the country will proudly pay her $10,000 a speech to go out there and lie to them. It's amazing, Democrats. I'll lie to you for half that. I seriously will. So listen to this whiny little brat, this entitled millennial, this 32-year-old member of Congress who got caught violating House rules is now claiming she's the victim.
I'm leaving, but we have men who have been credibly accused of intentional acts of sexual violence and remain in boardrooms, on the Supreme Court, in this very body, and worst of all, in the Oval Office.
I'm a victim. You bang one staffer and it's all over for me. Oh, but everybody else has been credibly accused of everything. Yes, Brett Kavanaugh was credibly accused. Have you noticed that President Trump's accusers kind of went away? Have you noticed that Herman Cain's accusers from the 2012 election went away? Gloria Allred trotted them out. They had that big press conference. We're going to sue for sexual harassment and all of these. Oh, he dropped out of the race. Never mind. Mission accomplished. On to the next wrecking ball moment. These people are disgusting. Katie Hill got everything she deserved. And then some, if you saw the pictures. So, she will be missed by somebody. Probably. Somewhere, I assume. All righty. The signed David Limbaugh book that I do have to give away, and if you want to enter to win that, now is the time. Go right ahead. Email Derek@dailycaller.com, and you will be entered to give it away next Friday, is Jesus on Trial. I have one signed copy of that. I have a couple of unsigned copies that I'll get signed next time David's in town, along with a bunch of copies of his new book, which you should absolutely pick up. Important, important book. Guilty by Reason of Insanity. Why the Democrats Must Not Win. Because they must not win. And the winners of the signed copy of Jarrett Stepman's book are, and it's two ladies, I think, J.C. Haller. Congratulations, J.C. Haller. And if I'm mispronouncing your name, sorry about that. And Lorraine Swift, a name I can pronounce for once. Hallelujah and amen. So Lorraine Swift and J.C. Haller, congratulations. I will be emailing you directly to get your physical address to mail you off a signed copy of The War on History. And go ahead and enter for Jesus on Trial. Please continue to rate and review on iTunes. I appreciate that. We're fast approaching like 900 starred reviews and 250 written reviews, so it'll be cool to cross those milestones. On a personal note, starting Monday morning, 9 a.m. in the Eastern Time, I will be live on WCBM in Maryland, WCBM.com. I'll be the lead-in for Rush Limbaugh, so it's Limbaugh's all around for me. And the podcast, of course, will be up as always, as usual. The only thing that might change is I might record it a little bit earlier. That's all. But it'll still be up first thing in the morning. So don't worry about that. Otherwise, email me whatever you got if you want to support the show. It's much appreciated. It's patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast. Anything else you got? I hope you had a good Halloween. Quinn did her first trick-or-treating this year. Last year, we didn't go around. She dressed up like a chicken, but we didn't go around because she wasn't even 2 years old. And this year, she dressed up as Owlette from PJ Masks, and we took her around the block. And she got quite a little haul. She was kind of confused by the whole thing. Now, I think for the next week, she's going to think that every door she walks up to, somebody's going to give her candy. But she liked it, and she tried to dig into all the candy, and we didn't let her. But because she has to sleep at some point. But she had a blast. I hope you had a good Halloween as well. I hope you have a great weekend. We'll be back here on Monday. See you then.
You know, thank God for the deep state.